ॐ अज्ञानचिनिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाक्षलाखाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. I sincerely welcome everyone to our Prerna festival. I'm very, very grateful to have this opportunity to speak some words tonight as a service to this large gathering of wonderful souls. The topic is being a true friend. Oftentimes in life, we think we have good friends until Providence puts us in a situation where we find he's either an enemy or he's just not there when I need him the most. According to the values we have in our life, there are different conceptions of what a friend is. To some people, a friend is someone I play cards with, go to the cinema with, or maybe even go to the restaurant with and drink intoxications, and then talk whatever comes out of our minds. To some people, a friend is that we share our interest in cricket or racing cars or finding girlfriends. You're laughing, but in most of the world, this is what friendship is about. Or somebody, when I'm having anxiety, I could just dump my mind out to and he'll listen to me. And then when I have anxiety, I'll dump my mind out to him and he'll listen to me. But then we find out he told so many other people. It's actually quite rare to maintain a friendship over a period of long duration in this world. Because, essentially, conditioned souls think in terms of janasya mohoya mahamameti, I and mine. I am this body. I am the particular designations of this body. I have my desires, my passions. I and mine. Essentially, what gives me enjoyment is priority. And if someone facilitates or assists my selfish enjoyment, that is a friend. But if that same person creates an impediment in my enjoyment, then they're no longer a friend. I move on to find somebody else, someone more enlightened for my perception of reality. But from a spiritual perspective, friends are those who are willing to rise to a higher level beyond our own tastes, beyond our own inclinations, beyond our mood swings, beyond the fickle, restless nature of the mind and senses and the ego, and are really there to serve each other. From a spiritual perspective, Jivira Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas, we are all servants of the Lord. And because every living being is a part of the Lord, we are servants. So many times, we're so interested in somebody being my friend. But from a spiritual perspective, it's more important to be a friend to that other person. If both people have that consciousness to be a friend, there is a very, very deep spiritual relationship. If the purpose of life is sense gratification, then having friends on all of these various levels we have been talking about makes good sense. But the Bhagavatam says, Nayam, what is that verse? Nayam deho deha bhajam na loke kastan kanman arhati vidpujam je. Tapo divyam putra kayena sattvam sudyadisam brahma sokyam dvananta. That sense gratification is available to the animals. Human life begins when we are willing to perform tapasya for the purpose of self-realization. Tapasya means selfless activities for a higher goal. So when we understand that the goal of life is to go beyond birth and death and the sufferings of the body and mind, the sufferings of natural conditions, the sufferings caused by other living entities. And to understand our relationship with God and fulfill the real need of the heart, which is to love. The origin of that necessity for love is the soul's love for God. On the spiritual platform, it's the only real happiness. Without that, the body, the mind, they will have some flickering pleasures, some flickering anxieties in various relationships and so forth, but the soul is starving. So real friendship, true friendship, is when we can help each other to realize that ecstatic love within our own hearts and thus transcend birth and transcend death. And when we establish our friendship on that platform, in a mood of servitude, then we rise above all the dualities and all the phenomena that's stirring on this worldly plane. That is a true friend. There are many examples. Vidura. Vidura was a real friend to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra was, due to the influence of his son, committing horrible karmic activities. He was acting immorally, unethically. Dhritarashtra thought that Duryodhana was his friend. Because Duryodhana was giving him sense gratification. Duryodhana was his son and was justifying Dhritarashtra to be the king or the father of the king. Yes? Dhritarashtra was sitting on the throne and Duryodhana was ruling the kingdom under him. So Duryodhana was giving him something. Honor, prestige, power. Vidura was telling him the truth. The kingdom belongs to the Pandavas. Give to them. They are pure devotees of Krishna. If you destroy them, if you try to destroy them, you will destroy yourself. In the most palatable possible way, Vidura was trying to tell Dhritarashtra the truth. Because he loved him. Because he cared about him. But not only Dhritarashtra would not listen, but under the influence of his son, Vidura was blasphemed. Dhritarashtra didn't say a word about it. Vidura was banished from the kingdom. He lost his wife, his family, his home, his property, his everything. Why? Because out of love, he was trying to be honest and save his friend. And Dhritarashtra went right along with Duryodhana in banishing Vidura. But Vidura kept trying to help, no matter what. And in the end, after the battle of Kurukshetra, when everything Vidura said came true, Dhritarashtra was living a miserable life, just carrying on trying to enjoy comforts under Yudhisthira, who he tried to kill, who he banished. Vidura came all the way back to Hastinapur as a friend to tell Dhritarashtra, look at what you have done. Look at you. You should leave this place with me to free yourself of all of your immense mountains of sins. And to realize God. It took Dhritarashtra losing all of his sons and everything before he could hear the words of Vidura. But he did hear them. And Vidura took him to the forest and taught him the process of self-realization and yoga. So that Dhritarashtra attained liberation. If Vidura did not come back to save him, Dhritarashtra would have miserably suffered birth after birth after birth. What a friend Vidura was. He was getting no sense gratification. He could have enjoyed immense sense gratification at home if he just kept his mouth shut. But he could not tolerate seeing someone he loved going so far in the wrong direction and incriminating himself in so much future suffering and offenses against God and the devotees. So Vidura, the qualities of his friendship were tolerance, forgiveness, and personal self-sacrifice. And they were all based on love, on real care. Prahlad Maharaj was also such a friend. His father was not only materialistic, he was constantly drunk. He was cruel. He was murderous. He was irreligious. He was against God. And every time Prahlad talked to him with utmost respect and affection, folded palms, he would speak the truth to his father. And his father hated hearing it. And actually, Prahlad spoke in the most palatable possible ways. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopinath. As a result, Hiranyakashipu tried to kill Prahlad in every way. That became his obsession in life, to murder his son. And after Lord Narasingadev delivered, after Lord Narasingadev rid the world of Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad was offered a benediction. What did he ask for? He didn't ask anything for himself. Nothing. He asked, please give liberation to my father. Give him your mercy. Such a friend. Cheap friendship is just getting along to just enjoy life in various ways, and be there for each other on that level. The real friendship is really concerned for the soul, for the body, the mind, and the soul. We have seen in just the circles of devotees, when our Stoka Krishna Prabhu was dying of cancer. Such wonderful friendship. Devotees were taking so much time out of their own lives just to be there, to chant for him, to read for him, to help him remember Krishna. Nothing for themselves. We've had devotees who've had, you know, serious heart problems and requiring surgeries. And no one was ordered to, but devotees just spontaneously came forward to raise funds for the surgery, to cook for the family, to chant and make everyone feel closer to God in the situation and supported. And some of those families that went through that said, our own relatives did not extend themselves so much. Krishna tells in Gita, Suhrida Sarvadehinam, that I am the best well-wishing friend of all living beings. What does it mean to be Krishna conscious? In essence, it means to be an instrument of Krishna's love in our life. in whatever relationships we may have. How is Krishna's friendship, the supreme friend? A friend in need is a friend indeed. And what is our greatest time of need? The time of death. Who can save us at the time of death? One of our devotees, he joined the Brahmachari Ashram. Family was furious. Furious. She was the only son. And it was his choice. In our ashram, no one is told you should join the ashram. The ashram is there for those who really want a very, very serious life of a sadhu, but it has to be their choice. We just as much encourage people to be exemplary grihasthas. And perhaps 80% choose to be exemplary grihasthas, if not more. So this person was determined. He wanted to be a sadhu. He had a very high-paying managerial job and just decided on his own. So his parents, very disturbed. Do you like this story? Okay, I just wanted to make sure. So one day they came to me. Father, mother, and uncle. And the mother was weeping uncontrollably. And the father, not uncontrollably, but she was weeping. I'm sorry, I exaggerated. She was weeping. And the father was angry. And the uncle was burning hot. Why are you stealing our son? If your son wants to come home and get married, I will give him all support. But your son, he wants to follow in the footsteps of the greatest saints in history. Shankaracharya left his widowed mother, and she cried when he took sannyas. But look what he's done. Sripad Madhvacharya, he left home at 11 years old. His mother and father were brokenhearted. They were angry as fire. When he was 12, he took sannyas. But look what he's done for the world. Ramanujacharya. He also left home very young. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was 24 years old, he gave up so much, the most loving young wife, the most loving widowed mother. But look what they have done. They have given spiritual enlightenment, love of God, to hundreds of millions of people over centuries. Your son wants to follow in the footsteps of these men. Honestly, earnestly, sincerely. Out of his own free will. Who am I to stand before God and stop him? And who are you to stand before God and stop him? You'll see, someday, you will be so proud of him. The uncle especially was very angry, very angry. But he didn't have any arguments against that so much. very soon after, within a year or two, the uncle got cancer. He was dying real fast. This son from the ashram was at his bedside every day, reading Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, gave him chanting beads. His uncle was chanting. This went on, as far as I remember, for many weeks. I went to visit the uncle. He's completely bedridden. He was in his last days. It was the first time I saw him since he was in good health, and he was very angry on me. And very angry on his nephew also. When I walked in the room, he was crying in happiness. He said, "My nephew is the best friend I've ever had in my life. In fact, I accept him as my guru. I am going to die any day. And there is nothing anybody in my family can do to help me except cry. And what good does that do?" How is that helping me? They're just asking, "How do you feel?" And they're crying, "How do you feel?" And "How we miss you." And what's that doing? He said, "My nephew comes more than anybody else. And he's given me the understanding that I'm the eternal soul, that I'm beyond death. He's given me the holy name. And he's taught me how to chant the holy name. And he's teaching me Bhagavad Gita. And now I have no fear of death. I feel joyful because I've understood the goal of life. Not only is he my best friend in life, but I accept him as my guru. Because at the time of my greatest need, he has come with the grace, with the knowledge, and with the ability to save me. This is real love." Recently, just a couple of weeks ago actually, I visited the parents of one of our brahmacharis. And they're just blissfully into Krishna consciousness. And I was just remembering some years before, they were in my room crying, "What has happened to our son?" Now they're saying, "We owe everything good in our life to our son. He's our guru. He's our best friend. We wasted our whole life until we understood what he was telling us." Such friendship. Friendship is based on the spirit of sacrifice as an expression of love for the welfare of others. And that friendship has its fullest, deepest, and realest experience when it's centered around our true relationships with God or Krishna. a more superficial example that I have often given. Shortly after I came to this particular movement, I had a service of milking cows. And the person I was supposed to milk cows with, because we did two people for each cow, because cows have, their udders have four parts, so I would be on one side going, and he'd be on the other side going, like that. And not only did we milk the cows together, but we brushed the cows together, we herded the cows in the fields together, we cleaned the goshala together, we shoveled the cow dung together. It was ready. But there was a problem. He didn't like me at all. And to be honest with you, I remember thinking at least 20 times every day, if I didn't have to do this service with him, I would have nothing to do with this man. Throughout my life, this is just the kind of person that I would have nothing to do with. He's just completely opposite what I am. We have nothing in common except shoveling cow dung. And I knew that he was thinking exactly the same thing of me, and probably with many more graphic adjectives. But somehow or other, for the service of Krishna and the cows, we just realized that we have to go above all of our cultural differences, our mental conditioning differences, our taste differences, our ego differences. There was nothing we had in common except that we were there for Prabhupada and Krishna to do something together. That was the only thing we had in common. We didn't even like the same prasad. Some things, but... but somehow or other, we both decided that for the higher purpose of pleasing God, serving God, and helping our guru, we're going to tolerate each other and try, and in one sense, as time was going on, we came to realize what a blessing it was that we didn't like each other. How is that a blessing? You have to spend the whole day, almost every day, with someone you don't like? The blessing was, in order for us to find meaning in this relationship, we had to unite on a higher platform. The platform of devotional service. Service to God. Prabhupada said, you can show your love for me by how you could cooperate. Do you know, in just a matter of a couple months, we became best friends from the core of our hearts. And we remained best friends for the next 25 years until he recently departed from this world. We became lifelong friends. And at that point, we didn't even notice our differences. There weren't any differences. We loved each other dearly. We'd do anything for each other. Anything he did good, I was just so proud of. And anything I did good, he was so proud of. There was love. that love came from uniting on a spiritual platform. That's where real friendship is. Real friends never become envious of each other. A real friend takes joy in the success of the other and takes pain in the failures of the other. Because envy is based on egoistic selfishness. That's all. No one is envious unless they're really selfish. They're thinking about me. Yes? I want fame, and I can't stand that this person's getting more recognition than me. I want success, and I can't tolerate that this person is gaining more than me. A real friend, the more the friend excels, the happier we become, the prouder we become. We want to speak about the wonderful things that our friend is doing. Yes? That type of friendship, which is based on serving God through each other, is immune and transcendental to the effects of Kali Yuga. Kali means the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Husband and wife should be that type of friendship. Parents, children, that type of friendship. And friends, that's real friendship. In life and in death. Krishna can save us from death. And if we are instruments of Krishna's love, then we can also be real friends. Gauranga Prabhu reminded me of one story. On a relative platform, there was a big mafia boss in Chicago. I'm sure you're all very interested now. Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad, Vidura. Those are very divine topics. But this is coming closer to home. Especially for me, because I was born and raised in Chicago. And this was the time of the biggest mobsters and gangsters. And this one big gangster, he was killing, he was bootlegging. That's when alcohol was illegal, and producing and selling alcohol was a federal crime. The good old days, you may say. And because there was so much money in doing, there's so much money in doing illegal things. It's always been like that. Yes? That's why people who deal, produce and deal with illegal things, there's so much money in it. If there's a competitor, they kill each other. So much of the killings and deaths are between different gangs who are infringing on other people's profits. And of course the government. So this man was doing prostitution, bootlegging, producing alcohol when it was illegal. He was insurance. You've heard of insurance? Well, for them, insurance, it's a very simple policy. They go into your store and say, give us $150 a month insurance, and we'll make sure that your store doesn't get bombed. But if you don't pay us this insurance policy, we'll make sure your store is bombed. Very simple. And these poor store owners, they're just... And once you tell them that, if they don't pay, you have to bomb their store. Because you have to set the example. Nobody else will believe you unless you set the example. And they even say, I'm a nice person. Listen, I don't want to hurt you. But if I don't bomb your store, then nobody else will pay me. So nothing personal. It's just business. I told you this would be more home. So this gangster, he kept out of jail because he had such a brilliant attorney. You call them lawyers in India or advocates? He was a lawyer. He was a fantastic lawyer. His name was Easy Eddie. That's an American name. And no matter what this gangster did, Easy Eddie just twisted the law in so many ways and got him out of every trial, trial after trial. He was always found innocent. So this gangster was giving huge amounts of money to Easy Eddie because he was very wealthy. And he had practically a city block as his estate, this lawyer. He had a beautiful house. He had a son. That son, he gave him, as soon as he was 16 years old, to get a driver's license, he got brand new fast car, any place he wanted to go. In days when there was practically nobody, he would give vacations anywhere he wanted, best possible clothes, so many pairs of shoes. Give him everything. Because of his connection, he could get him in any university he wanted to. But as time went on, he saw that his son was not happy. And Easy Eddie was thinking, I've given my son everything. I've given him anything he wants to enjoy, any place he wants to go, anything he wants to possess, I've given it to him. But there's one thing I have not given to him. A father that he could respect and be proud of. A father that he could look up to with pride. A father who has dignity and integrity. And this was burning his heart away. And ultimately, out of his love for his son, he came to the realization, the only way that I can ever give my son that is to testify what I know about these gangsters. If I do that, I will definitely be killed. But if I don't, I have not really shown love to my son. And I haven't given something he could grow with in life. So he testified. And so many of the gangsters got put in jail. And others had a real hard time. He He was walking down a side street one night. He was gunned down and killed. Hare Krishna. He was willing to die for a higher principle of being a real friend. Now I'll tell you another story, different story, about that sacrifice. There was a pilot in the United States Air Force. And he was sent on a mission. There were those airships, gigantic ships that airplanes would take off and go out and bomb, and they were fighting against the Japanese in World War II. And a whole fleet of bombers took off from the ship, a whole fleet of ships that were in the Pacific Ocean. They were going to a particular place to bomb the enemy. What happened is he was, along with all the others, he happened to notice that one of the people on the ship didn't put petrol in his tank. Technical error. So they were going a long distance to go bomb. So he had to turn around and go back to the ship. The others were way long gone to get fueled up again and then try to meet him. On his way back, he saw a whole fleet of Japanese bombers coming right toward the ships to bomb them. There were tens and thousands of sailors and soldiers on those big giant ships, that fleet of ships, tens and thousands. They were all going to be killed. These bombers were coming. I think there were about at least a dozen of them just coming close right at the ships. So all he had to do is just kind of, you know, turn around. But he decided. His radios weren't working either. He couldn't even tell them. There was nothing he could do to warn them. He just flew right into those other dozen planes and started shooting and shooting and shooting at them. And they thought, this man is crazy. We have 12 or 20 people, 12 or 20 planes. This is one plane. It didn't even have any, hardly gas in it. And he's just coming and attacking. They never saw anybody so fearless as this. So they were fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting, and he was running into them. And he wasn't afraid of death. He had to save all those tens of thousands of people. Thousands of people at least. And he shot down about five or six of them. And the others just thought, this man is so mad. They just, in fear, just all flew away. Meanwhile, his plane was completely beaten by... There were dozens and dozens and dozens of bullet holes and everything else, and he was ramming into the planes, and his, somehow or other, whatever was left of it, he just landed. And all the ship members were looking up and seeing this unbelievable sight. He won all sorts of congressional medals of honor and purple hearts because he was wounded. His name is Butch O'Hare. The airport in Chicago is known as O'Hare Airport. It's named after him. He was considered one of the greatest heroes in American history. Because he risked everything to help others. Butch O'Hare was the son of Easy Eddie. What his father's sacrifice did to him created that spirit of sacrifice in his heart. To be willing to risk for the welfare of those you love and those you respect and other people. That type of integrity is what a real hero is in this world. Yes, you know, there's athletes who win events and help the team to win. That's nice. But the heroes that really make a deep impression on human society, people like this. Who are the people who are really people respect in today's world? Nelson Mandela. He went to prison for his people. And who was his inspiration? Martin Luther King, who went to prison for his people. And who was his inspiration? Mahatma Gandhi, who went to prison for his people, risked his life for his people. But on the highest platform, one who does the greatest service. Because no matter how much you help somebody, they still have to grow old, get diseased, and die. But if you can enlighten a person to their eternal nature, their soul, what love is that? You free them forever from all the sufferings of birth, old age, disease, and death. Our Guru Maharaj, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he left Vrindavan at the age of 69 to give people he never met before the love of Krishna. What a friend. On the Jaladuta, the cargo ship, that's where he celebrated his 70th birthday. There was no celebration. And shortly after that, a series of heart attacks. 70-year-old man in the middle of the Arabian Sea. No medical help, no facilities, no medicine. On top of the heart attack, there was immense seasickness. Came out of it after 31 days on that ship. And those heart attacks happened at the beginning. 31 days, he arrived in New York. He was living in Bowery. He was homeless, practically. He had no money, he had no friends, nothing. And everyone in India who he knew was saying, come back, come back. You can't do it. You're too old. It's too cold. But he felt. He'd see every single person he would see. He'd practically cry. You see, when you love Krishna, you know what it's like. You can't bear people. You can't bear to see people who who have it but have lost it, have forgotten that great treasure, and they're just struggling in an anxiety-ridden life trying to somehow or other enjoy, when the ultimate enjoyment's right there, Krishna. So many sacrifices he endured just to be a friend to everyone and anyone, because he saw everyone as his brother and sister. That is love. He would sign all of his letters, "Your ever well-wisher." A friend on the spiritual platform is an ever well-wisher. We may not be able to imitate these great souls, but we should understand and we should aspire. These are the kinds of friends that I need. And this is the type of friend that I want to be. An instrument of the love of the Supreme Friend, or Krishna, God. In order to give, we require something to give. Kalera dosani de rajan es asti he kumahan guna. Kirtanar eva krishnasya mukta sangha parambraje. In this age of Kali Yuga, there are so many problems. But there's a simple benediction that God has appeared in his name. And by chanting the name of God, our godly qualities are awakened. Prabhupada used to say, we don't want to become God, but we want to become godly instruments of God's love and grace. The chanting of God's names awakens those qualities from within us. And if we live a moral life of good character and integrity, and really value an unselfish service attitude toward others, if we have that consciousness, those values, then as we chant the holy names of the Lord, it very, very effectively awakens our dormant love of God. And the more we have, the more we could give. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that when you have love of God, when that love is directed toward the people in the world, it takes the form of pure compassion. Not saying that this person is low class and this person is high class. This person is man, this person is woman. This person is white or red or yellow or black or bronze. This person is uneducated, or this person is very intellectual. This person eats roti and this person eats chop suey. These are all just temporary, external, superficial differences. The chanting of the holy names helps us to see. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavihastini suni chaiva supakecha pandita samadarsh. See everyone with equal vision. And want to be a friend, want to be a real well-wisher to everyone. Because we see everyone as a part of God, as a brother, as a sister. And we want to do real good for them, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. This is how we understand being a true friend. Thank you very much.
thank you for such a wonderful class, Maharaj. Maharaj, my question is, which is the one important quality required to be a true friend?
I would say genuine concern for the welfare of the object of your friendship.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Considering these spiritual benefits, we invite friends so many times for programs and all these things. Few friends comes and they, after that, you know, they don't show the interest. So what kind of dealing we should do with such friends?
You can be a good example by your own enthusiasm and determination. By being unconditionally kind to them so that their hearts open to your example. And you can pray for them and can give prasad also.
Good evening to everyone. This is, of course, not a question to Swamiji. This is a question to all audiences. That day, we disciples, we were sitting together, and I just put a question. What is the biggest sin in today's era of the world? I'm asking you all. Today's era, there is a scientific reason behind. It's a clue. No. It's very simple. In today's era, no, dear. It's very simple. Again, I'm telling. Let us be health conscious. To fall sick is the biggest sin in today's era. So be healthy. Keep your health up. That's very important. If you are healthy, you can go around the world. That's all. Thank you.
Yeah, Maharaj, in friendship, we need to help the friend to advance in Krishna consciousness. So when he's in a critical situation, wherein he requires some guidance, so I heard in a lecture from you a few months back that when we are giving someone advice, we can only give advice. We cannot take decisions on their behalf. Because if we take decisions on their behalf, he won't mature in Krishna consciousness. So I wanted clarification on this, that how does maturity come about by taking decisions on our own and not allowing anyone to force decisions upon us?
There is the common example. If the mother bird just keeps bringing food to the baby will just sit there. The baby has to learn how to fly at a certain point. Yes? So similarly, bhakti is about utilizing our free will. And rather than taking away a person's free will by making decisions for them, by our example, by our teachings, we should try to guide people to help them to have the inner strength, the inner courage, and the inner wisdom to make the right choices themselves. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks the truth. But then he tells Arjuna, now you do what you like. You have to make the choice. So we simply repeat the truth that we have received from Krishna and help people to make those right choices. Then there's fulfillment. If you just do what you're told, there's not as much fulfillment as if you make the right choice to please God and to please those who you look up to. Does that answer your question? So real leadership is to help to give people the wisdom and the internal equipment by which, even under very difficult, trying circumstances, they will make the right choices. Right choices that are based on integrity, knowledge, and the will of God. Hare Krishna. In regard to his question, Prabhu's question, we can address a particular subject from different points of view. As far as what is the greatest sin, I'd like to speak the point of view from Valmiki's Ramayana, specifically the point of view of Lakshman, the brother of Ram. Ramchandra freed Sugriva of his enemy, Vali. Sugriva was living in exile on a little mountain. He could not leave that mountain because Bali had the power to kill him. But Bali was cursed. He could not go to that mountaintop, Rishyamukha. So Sugriva and Ram made an alliance. Ram said, I will remove Bali from your obstacle, but you help me find Sita, who has been kidnapped. So Ram did his part. But then Sugriva, who became king, he was enjoying so much. He was enjoying the kingdom. And he was supposed to help Ram after the 4 months to find Sita. But he was just enjoying all the luxuries and the facilities of the kingdom. He was intoxicated. And meanwhile, the rainy season ended. And Lakshman, every day, was becoming more and more angry. Where is this Sugriva? And Lakshman is not the person you want to be angry with you. So he came down from the Prashravana mountain where he was living with Ramchandra, and his eyes were like burning red coals. None of the Vanaras, the monkey soldiers, could even look at him. And he stood before Sugriva. And Sugriva understood that it's the end. Unless I make some serious choices. Hanuman told him, you better call your leaders here right away because Lakshman's coming. And he did. And then Lakshman looked right into the eyes of Sugriva and said, ingratitude is the greatest of all sins on this earth. Not to be grateful. Grateful for people who have helped us. Gratitude to our parents. Gratitude to our teachers. Gratitude to our friends. And especially gratitude to Bhagavan, who's giving us the sunshine and giving us the rain and giving us the water and giving us our bodies and giving us himself if we just accept it. A grateful heart is a heart in which the seed of love can easily grow. An ungrateful heart is like a hard, dry, rocky, unfertile field. The seed is there, but it just doesn't go anywhere. How to develop unselfish service attitude? I have lot of material desires. Welcome to the real world. The answer to your question begins with asking the question. To grow, a certain humility is required. We have to see our own shortcomings. And we have to have the will to go beyond them. And the best thing, by associating with people who have unselfish service attitude, and by cultivating those activities that develop an unselfish service attitude, is the means by which we can express our real desire. It's just like if you're sick. First you have to admit you're sick. Otherwise you're not going to take the cure. If you're sick, first you admit you're sick. Then you go to a doctor. And then doctor gives you medicine. But then you have to take the medicine. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasa tadatmanam srijamyaham. Krishna comes to this world as the supreme doctor. He comes with the wisdom and the processes by which we can be healed from these material desires that cause so many anxieties and frustrations. He gives us a whole philosophy and science in the Gita. So if we associate with people who are really striving to come to this higher platform of consciousness, and we're willing to take the medicine that will cure us, then gradually we will become cured. What a true friend Krishna was to Sudama. And what a true friend Sudama was to Krishna. Yes, they were in the ashram of Sandipani Muni together. And Sandipani Muni and his wife asked them to collect wood in the forest. But then there was a big rainstorm. It became dark. They were lost. Krishna's never lost. But he accepts this role to draw out the loving exchanges with his devotees. So they spent that night together, shivering in the forest, before Sandipani Muni and his wife came and got them in the morning. So they were friends. Childhood friends. Sudama was living in poverty. He had nothing. His wife couldn't tolerate seeing him in this condition and asked him, go to meet Krishna. He's your friend. He's living in Dwarka. He has so much. He can certainly help you. Sudama decided to go for the sake of his wife. They had a real friendship. The Acharyas explained the story so nicely. She didn't care herself about the poverty. She couldn't tolerate seeing her husband in this state. And he didn't mind the poverty, but he felt great sympathy that his wife was in this state. So he said, if I go to see Krishna, I must bring a gift, but we have nothing. So she went out and begged for some chipped rice. Very cheapest food. Wrapped it up in an old cloth. Put it in his side and walked to Dwarka. And people saw this Brahmin wearing tattered clothes. But he was given entrance into all the gateways to Krishna's personal palace, then ushered into Krishna's personal inner chamber where he was sitting with Rukmini, his queen. Krishna, to set the example, he got off of his own bedstead, very opulent, silken, bejeweled bedstead. He put Sudama on that bedstead. Krishna washed his feet to show how to honor a guest, especially a guest of such, in Krishna's eyes, such stature. Rukmini was fanning him with chamara fan. Krishna personally fed him a wonderful meal and offered him all sorts of hospitality. Then they exchanged their loving friendship of their early years. Krishna asked Sudama, did you bring something for me? Sudama looked around at a palace that was just full of opulences that are not seen in heaven. And he just ate this delicious, sumptuous meal. how can I give Krishna broken, chipped rice that was begged from someone's house and stored in my little piece of cloth? He said, no, I don't have anything, Krishna. But Krishna knows. And he forcibly grabbed that chipped rice and ate. He ate a morsel of it. Rukmini stopped him. No more. That's enough. She could not tolerate seeing Krishna eating such a poor man's food. But Krishna, for him, it was more delicious than anything else could be. Now this is interesting. Because usually if you want to make an offering to Krishna, mantra, tantra, yantra, puja, mudra, so many formalities. Sudama didn't perform any ritual. He didn't even offer it. He was hiding it. But because of his love, because of Sudama's love and friendship toward Krishna, Krishna was hungry for that chipped rice. In Hastinapur, Krishna would not accept the royal offerings of Duryodhana. But he relished the banana peels of Vidura. Because Krishna does not accept what is offered. He accepts the purpose in which it is offered. He is bhava-grahi. Well, Krishna, he was hungering and thirsting for the love of Sudama that was within that chipped rice. And he ate it with great satisfaction. One morsel. Sudama left. Krishna asked him, "Is there anything I can do for you? Anything you want?" Sudama said, no, just let me be your friend, let me love you, let me serve you, nothing else. So he was walking back home, and he was thinking in his mind, my wife sent me to Dwarka to ask Krishna for some wealth, and I didn't ask him for anything. But then when he arrived, where his house used to be, he saw beautiful palaces and gardens and lakes, and his wife came out wearing lovely silks. Sudama wept. He wept tears of ecstasy. He understood, without even asking Krishna, Krishna gave me all of this. Such a friend. But the most beautiful part of the whole story is Sudama lived in that luxury with his wife, but they had the same exact consciousness of doing everything selflessly for the Lord as they did when they were living in a thatched hut. Their consciousness was pure, selfless devotion. So yes, Krishna is the supreme friend. And to reciprocate with that friendship is the greatest pleasure, the greatest fulfillment. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Looking at you, sir, I was inspired to tell that story. Shall we have a few minutes of kirtan?